third for setting a screen.
He starts a physical play, although George Taylor just got caught with a moving screen.
Pick and roll. And a foul. Offensive foul coming up. Dead battle box. Get it right there.
Pizzo's dying for a moving screen. Same play for Michigan here. Offensive.
Hello, everybody. It is January 14th. This is another episode of The Moving Screen. I'm Brendan Quinn of The Athletic. I'm here with Dylan Burkhart, umhoops.com. Dylan, my man, how are you?
I'm good. We are still talking about two teams undefeated in conference play.
Do you think it's a coincidence?
I think that this podcast is probably mostly responsible for the success of both teams. It's the only explanation, really.
I mean, this is the springboard to possibly the greatest year in the rivalry's history.
And if there was without no podcast, it just wouldn't be like, it would be nothing.
They would have flamed out. It would have been, you know, like Minnesota, Iowa, something like that. Just very mediocre Big Ten teams in a sea. You know, and are they mediocre Big Ten teams? I don't even know what's going on. We were talking about this league a month ago, like, it was the jam, and now it's January 14th. You and I just tried to put together our power rankings, and I almost had to get into the liquor cabinet. What do you make of this, man?
It's a league of seven seeds. It's a league of good teams, but not a lot of great teams. And I think we're seeing more and more that I know a couple weeks ago we were talking about the number of wins it would take to win the Big Ten, and I think that number's going up, not down. Mm-hmm. It seems to be two teams that are basically the class of the league. Maryland is right there, and then there's just a washing machine in the middle of just 500 teams. And we thought that earlier, but Big Ten just played well enough in the non-conference that those 500 teams probably can still make the tournament. How many teams would be favored to make the second weekend, though? Probably not a lot.
Yeah, never in a million years, if you told me a month ago that we'd be looking at Maryland as really the only team that could like make a move in the next week to get into the first couple lines in the standings. It's just, I don't know, it's crazy. The league is eating itself kind of as we projected. I just thought it might be a little bit cleaner, you know what I mean? Like, just some of the unexpected losses are not going well, but for our purposes, it's a hell of a year for the for the pod, for this illustrious podcast and its long, glorious history. I mean, frankly, in the history of the podcast is 32-2. That's the record for the pod.
That's pretty good.
It's not bad. So we're going to start this week with Michigan, still undefeated. I'm going to put you on the spot right now. Right out of the gates, my man. When's the first loss?
Saturday.
Whoa. Interesting. So you're saying Saturday against an Indiana team that's coming off back-to-back losses.
Team.
Or Wisconsin. I'm sorry. I was jumping ahead to Assembly Hall.
You were jumping ahead to what your pick was going to
be. Well, maybe. I don't know. So you say Wisconsin. Wisconsin, where Michigan won last year. Yeah. And
correct.
Wisconsin, which has already lost home games to Minnesota and Purdue.
Correct. Wisconsin, which is basically very good except for horrific free throw shooting. They're one of the top shooting teams in the Big Ten. They are going to – it's a little tough. We don't know what they're going to do tonight. We should say we're recording this on Monday evening before both games tonight.
Correct.
So we lose a little bit of context there. But Wisconsin's going to be in a spot where they need that win. And I think that really, like, you could be looking at a 3-3 Wisconsin team that would be looking at potentially dropping their third home game in league play. That's a pretty big spot for a need-a-win sort of game that you would expect from Wisconsin. You know what I mean?
I'm going to expect Wisconsin to lose tonight to Maryland at Xfinity Center. Brutal place to play. I'll probably be wrong. Per usual, but you know, Wisconsin doesn't have that much juice. In late game situations, it's an absolute disaster. Their best player can't shoot free throws and can barely stay on the floor, and their guards turn into turnover machines. So, you know, I would have a hard time picking Michigan to lose to Wisconsin right now, even though it's always been kind of the most obvious, man, that's probably their first loss sitting there. And then you go Minnesota at home. Obviously, Michigan will be, Ken Pom has them winning that game by 13 points, which seems really, really high. But then it's a road game at Indiana, which Michigan just won. If they get through this three-game stretch, you know, it's going to take kind of an unexpected upset win to end this thing. Like, they're not going to go undefeated, right? That's not going to happen. But if they get through these three games, it gets really, really interesting, this conversation.
I would say you have to include the road trip to Iowa also. The next three road trips, I think, are all
sure
very losable games. I would say there's a better chance that Michigan loses two games than wins three.
Really? That's a take.
I tweeted the stat out earlier today, but Michigan has played four KenPom Tier A games, which is basically top 50 adjusted for home or away.
Yeah.
11 of their final 14 games are Tier A games.
Mm-hmm. Well, those Maryland games all got a lot more interesting.
They haven't played a Tier A game since at Northwestern.
Mm-hmm.
So the amount of just day-to-day difficulty that you're going to have in the schedule over the next month and a half, 2 months, whatever it is pretty hard to overrate. It's loaded. I mean, the schedule is just absolutely loaded coming down the stretch especially. But I think that, yeah, if they win a bunch of 50-50 games in the next 3 weeks, then, yeah, it'd get interesting. But I don't see them getting out of January without a loss.
That's fair. That's fair. Well, all right, let's jump back to Northwestern, kind of review this game before we look into Wisconsin a little bit deeper. I mean, of all the ways to win, this team is continuing to find new ones. And for an undefeated team in mid-January, that is probably the greatest compliment you can come up with, is they're finding new wrinkles, new ways. I've thought for a while that the offense was going to ultimately catch up with the defense and at least be on par with it, if not better. But it seems to be accelerating that process right now, mainly because of Xavier Simpson, who this last week was probably the best week of his college basketball career, and it might not be close.
Certainly offensively.
Yeah.
You didn't have Xavier Simpson hitting five threes on Sunday night against Northwestern?
I didn't. And I can tell you, the Northwestern staff was not projecting Teskey Simpson 8-for-13, bombs away from the perimeter.
If you're Northwestern, you go into that game and you can run the whole thing back, and you're going to say, I can guarantee that John Teskey and Xavier Simpson will take 19 jump shots. You would take that every single time. You would be saying, we're going to... I mean, I know they didn't have Vic Law, but that is exactly what they wanted to do have happen. But I also think you have to – some of those shots were just wide open. They were unguarded.
Wide, and they never adjusted. Like, Teskey hits the first two jumpers out of the gate and then starts bombing threes, and they just refused to change what they were doing.
I know they were sticking to the bit, and they had Pete Nance on Xavier Simpson. They were dropping him. They were doing all these things, and they did take away some other things Michigan wants to do. But at the end, it just got a little bit ridiculous. You might want to try something else at some point. But you also can't say much, because when they did it at Northwestern, they were really the only team to almost beat Michigan this year. So, and I still think the strategy makes sense, even if Simpson's not going to hit 5 of 10 three-pointers on any given day.
I mean, the fact that he took 10 three-pointers is ridiculous. And granted, shot as well as he ever had. And if you got to, you know, if you're open, you got to shoot it and all that stuff. But never in a million years would you think that. He only made five three-pointers his entire freshman year.
I think Beilein, he's only made 16 three-pointers this year, and five of them were last night. I think Beilein referred to it as a personal affront to Simpson's pride that they mm-hmm. would play like that, and I don't think that's really something you want to do with Xavier Simpson.
No, no. Do we talk about the tweet?
What tweet?
The tweet from last week. All right, so,
your tweet.
So night of the Michigan State-Purdue game, Cassius Winston goes out and has just not even a great game. Played okay. I think he had like five turnovers. But he so clearly outplayed Carson Edwards and basically controlled the game and won it on a number of levels for Michigan State. And so me being a very reactionary being, I tweet that Cassius Winston's the best guard in the Big Ten right now. Which, I don't know, is he player of the year right now if the season ends in the league?
Probably. He's certainly a front runner, I would say.
It's right there. I'd have a hard time voting Hap right now, I'll tell you that much, because like three of those losses are in his hands, basically.
Carson Edwards is also going to get some votes.
Those will be bad votes right now.
They'll be there.
Sure, sure. A lot of people don't pay attention. But, yeah, I mean, Cassius Winston probably right now is the guy, and rightfully so. So that was my take. And God damn, wouldn't you know, not only do all the Michigan fans come out in force to tell me that, you know, I'm an asshole and blah, 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 but also proceed to tag Xavier Simpson in the tweet. And now I'm not saying that he saw it. I have no idea. But he's been a little cold. We're going to say that. He's been a little cold with your resident beat writer here. And I got to put the pieces together. I think there might be something there. I don't know. This is guessing. But damn, if he didn't put together two games that made me greatly not reconsider. I still think the case stands for Cassius Winston. But I mean, Xavier Simpson right now is he put it this way: if Cassius Winston is the MVP of the league because of what he's done, his level of play, blah blah blah. If there's a more, is there a more important player in America than Xavier Simpson? That I don't know, because everything springs from his disposition and his play on the court for this team on both sides of the floor.
Yeah, and more we're seeing that on offense. Yeah. Like at Illinois, Michigan's offense was basically to put the ball in his hands, give him a high ball screen, and let him make a play. And that's why after the game, Brad Underwood told reporters that he would vote for Simpson as the MVP of the league. And it makes sense. He's certainly Michigan's MVP, but that's different than being
absolutely
the player of the year in the league, right? Those are different awards, and it's not called the MVP of the league for a reason. But just the way that he is controlling a game despite all of his limitations and whatever else, and it's just, he gives Michigan its identity really on both sides of the ball. And I don't know where his shooting will end up. I don't know if he'll start missing hook shots or what, but he is playing very well right now. And as long as he plays like that, Michigan's going to be in any game. And I have been tracking this over his career. He made three off the dribble jump shots this week. He hadn't made one of those in his whole career before that. So
That's a great stat.
It's just, his confidence is flowing. At the end of that game, I feel like he was flashing back to being in high school or something when he was a big-time scorer.
Yeah, people forget. I mean, he put up 60 points, what, twice, right, at Lima?
Yeah. Helps to have your dad leaving you in the game.
He's taking a bunch of shots and all that, but he's still got to put the ball in the basket. I agree with you. I'd be really curious to kind of see where he goes from here. And regarding Underwood, now I think I have to pay special attention to Brad Underwood's press conferences now and just make sure this isn't a thing that he does. Like after they play Minnesota, Amir Coffey's got to be the player of the year in the league or whatever. If he just kind of goes on and on, and Yeah, Penn State, Lamar Stevens, probably MVP of the league right now.
That's fair, but Simpson did absolutely dominate the second half of that.
He controlled.
Game.
He is controlling everything. Pace, flow, where the ball goes on both ends, and you know when he's playing like this, a lot of people have wondered, you know, whether Michigan peaked early, blah 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 blah. Well, you know, did anyone account for the fact that they could get better, and if Xavier Simpson continues to take these strides, they're going to be better. The offense will be better than the defense if they keep playing this way. And if that's the case, you know, everyone has known that this is a national championship contender. But if that happens, you know, they could be a national championship favorite.
Yeah, and the thing about Simpson is I don't think he really cares how he needs to win a game. He'll just do whatever he needs, right? And he can basically play any role for Michigan because of that. He's not a guy who's looking for his offense unless he knows the team is completely daring him to shoot. He's just – his sole focus is just out playing the guy across from him and winning the game. And I think that really stands out, especially when you get more into sort of tournament situations. And I think we've seen at this point this Michigan team really just take on that persona from him.
Yeah, for sure. And like just the way, like his timing, you know, just kind of knowing where guys are and, you know, waiting that extra half second to make a pass, right? And that the player A gets one extra half step on a guy and it makes all the difference. Like these are the incremental things that I remember a few weeks back. I was like, it seems like he's starting to kind of feel the offense the way Derek Walton did in the second half of his senior year, where he kind of got those teams on a yo-yo on defense and would, you know, he would space them out and read different things and see different things before they happened. Like that, this is what I was talking about there. And, you know, now they're top 20 in offense and defensive efficiency. I don't know. What do you think is the biggest, whether it's your numbers or your opinion, whatever, what's the soft spot for this team right now?
Two early fouls on John Teske.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how this team loses, is Teske gets in. He's been really good at staying out of foul trouble, but I don't know that they really have the – I think that will just be the recipe to start the first loss of the year.
Hmm. And you could see that in a Wisconsin game for sure, on the road going against Ethan Happ.
Yep, and you almost saw it against Indiana, where Michigan found itself in a lot of trouble when Teske picked up a couple, or like Indiana battled back into that game after Teske got into foul trouble in the second half.
Yeah.
I think that's where do you see the weakness, or the soft spot, as you say?
The free throw shooting is definitely still, I think, a thing, and there could be a game where they're just not falling. They're better.
They're shooting 76% in Big Ten play.
I still think it's going to
be in the conference.
I still think it's going to be a thing that, like you said, when there's a loss, there's going to have to be something that you circle. And I still think there's a game where it'll bite them, and then it'll become a thing all over again. This is just the way it happens. You know, it's just one of those, like, when you go through enough seasons watching teams, like, these things don't just disappear. Like, for people to just to say, like, oh, the free throw shooting solved, that's not a thing anymore. Like, I can guarantee you it's going to happen one game, and it'll all come back, and it'll turn into a thing all over again. Like,
but we've
just
been saying
that happens
for the last year, mm-hmm, that Michigan's going to start losing close games due to free throws.
You're saying games, plural.
Have they lost a close game due to – they've been a terrible free throw shooting for a year and a half, and I can't think of a game – that they really ended up losing because of free throws.
The Purdue game on the road last year, didn't they miss a few?
Maybe on the road.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's not like they've been up 6 points and choked the game away because at the free throw line, which is what you expect. And
but at the same time, in fairness, I'm trying to come up with a reason that an undefeated team is going to lose. And not only an undefeated team, but an undefeated team that is like insultingly balanced to the point where, as you know, we were going back and forth on Twitter a little bit today, like who's first team in the league? Who's first team all Big Ten on this team right now? It's either like the entire starting lineup or nobody. And like, what do you do with that? It's one of the most fascinating teams that I've certainly ever come across. And there aren't many holes. And so it's going to have to be one of those situations where they beat themselves, whether it's with foul trouble or with foul shooting or whatever. And you know what? Also, in all likeliness, you lose on the road at some point because you lose on the road. That's just going to happen where a team plays out of its mind and you lose. You get beaten, and that's fine. There's also going to probably be a game where they go 4-for-14 on threes, right? Like, that's going to probably happen. So, at some point, the shots aren't going to fall and they're going to lose a game.
They've basically done that in three of the last four games, which is...
Right. Well, the annoying part, or not the annoying part, but like the thing is that there's always going to be... Right now, there's always a guy... Yeah, right. Jordan Poole made one shot yesterday and they won by 20. Like, I mean, that's stupid. So, I don't know. They're really good.
Yeah, I think it's foul trouble for Teske. I'll stick to that.
That's fair.
He's been, we didn't really talk about it much, but he's been, probably might have had a better week than Xavier Simpson, you could say. So, that's, he's been so good, but they have not discovered a reliable option to back him up. And Isaiah Livers gives him some things as like a small ball five, but the defense is not nearly the same with him at the five.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen Michigan have to contain a real big guy without Teske. And that will be, I think, a problem.
And the thing with Teske beyond the shooting is he's getting rebounds he's never gotten before. And even the assists, he had four assists against Illinois. Like, you know, he's got great feel for the game. And If you can bait teams into having to come out on him, like, he can make the pass, right? He can beat some. If there's a guy cutting back door, he can make that pass all day. He has one turnover in the last four games.
Yeah, his ability against it's unbelievable. Illinois, he would short the ball screen where he would just kind of slip into the free throw line area and then catch the ball and make a pass to a backdoor cutter.
Right.
That's not easy to do for a 7-foot one guy, and he did it over and over and over again. And looked pretty damn comfortable doing it. That's a silly luck. Like, they tried, that's not even something Mo was ever that comfortable with. He was comfortable catching the ball and going to the basket, but being able to catch it and see the floor and make a pass, there's a lot about Teske's game that has really stood out this year. And that's why he's playing 30 something minutes, seems like every night.
Yeah. And this four game, right there, these last four Big Ten games, his minutes, 32. 24, 33, 35. So, beginning of the season, I'm sure if you go back and listen to what either of us were saying, it was, you know, it's a big ask for John Teske to be playing 30 minutes or low 30s. Like, that's going to be pretty hard, blah, blah, blah. What are they going to do about the backup five? Well, here he is. He's averaging 33. As long as he's out of foul trouble, he's going to play 33 minutes a game. And he, for a 7-foot-1 center, who they not only run some offense through, but who also steps out, has the ball in his hands, shoots, does all these things, to have one turnover in four Big Ten games playing those minutes. Like, you're not going to see that anywhere.
Or to have 10 blocks and 8 fouls.
Right.
And 4 steals.
Right.
You don't see that either. He's incredibly very weird disruptive player. And his ability to hedge pick and rolls is... I think underrated, and people have realized that more as the year goes on. They talked about it a lot on the broadcast last night, but his hands out on the perimeter, his hands defending the rim without fouling, I mean, there's just, I think it's hard to overrate what he's doing right now, but if it also, the fact that he has to play 35 minutes, you don't play a 7-foot-1 guy for 35 minutes unless he's amazing or you don't have anyone else to play.
Both?
In this case, it's both.
Super impressive, and I am here for the mid-February realization that John Teske's going pro early. That might be when John Beilein walks off the court and just say, "I'm done. I can't plan for any of this. I don't know what's going on." So we'll see. You want to jump ahead and look at Wisconsin a little bit before we get into Michigan State here?
Sure, we can hit on Wisconsin. We talked about them for a bit there. What were your thoughts on that Purdue-Wisconsin game on Friday night? That was a fun one.
Wisconsin is as frustrating as anyone in the country to watch in the last couple of minutes of the game. I already said it before, but between Trice and Davidson, just, I mean, being haphazard with the ball, that's being like courteous. I mean, they rank, they're sixth in the country in turnover percentage. And then in the last 4 minutes of every game, or not every game, but some notable games, they've just come unglued and are just throwing the ball away. Hap can't make a free throw to save his life. They're really frustrating. I was pretty high on Wisconsin coming in back into league play, even off that loss to Western Kentucky. And I'm not out. I'm not bailing on them, but they got some major stuff to figure out. I mean, you can't. So many games in the Big Ten are going to come down to the final couple minutes. Like, you have to have confidence that you can close out games, and they look completely befuddled when it gets to kind of game-winning time.
Yeah, they're second in the Big Ten in effective field goal percentage, fourth in turnover rate, first in three-point shooting percentage. And what do you think they rank in offensive efficiency?
27th.
Well, no, in the Big Ten, the eighth. So you would think
if they are one of the best
shooting teams. So it comes down to Hap can't make free throws. He's 7 of 22 at the free throw line in Big Ten play. They don't crash the offensive glass, but it still feels like they should be better offensively, and I have a hard time figuring out why. Other than just, I mean, I guess it's just the free throws, but I don't know. They are a frustrating team, but they also are not going to go. They're still a tournament team, right? Like, I don't.
Are they?
I'm not ready their to best bail
win
on
is,
them.
Their best win is NC State and Iowa and Oklahoma. I forgot about Oklahoma.
Those are all solid. Winning at Iowa?
Sure, sure.
Those are, I mean, there's a lot of season left. I think it would be a big, not a good look for Greg Gard if this season continues to go downhill. But I'm also not ready to just bail on them because they lost an overtime game when Carson Edwards scored 36 points.
Sure.
That's going to happen to some teams this year. You just don't want it to be you. The Minnesota game, I don't really know what to make about that. That was just a terrible offensive performance. But I think Ethan Happ is going to give Michigan problems. He's going to give just about anyone problems, and he's probably the best chance for, like I said, for Teske to get into foul trouble that Michigan's seen in a while.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I feel like we talked about this
against Purdue.
Yeah, he was brutal. And one of the things that we talked about before is, you know, how dependent they are on Demetric Trice just having good games. They just ebb and flow with him almost. And he finally got back on track from distance against Purdue, going 4 for 7 on threes, but went 0 for 7 on twos. Can't have that from a guard. Like, that's not good. So I don't know. He's been all over the place. But when he was really good, they were really good. And, you know, I would imagine who's the matchup on Trice in this game defensively for Michigan?
Simpson.
Well, how do you think that's going to go?
Probably not great for Mr. Trice.
Probably not great. And I got to think, if you can lock down Trice, then you can win this game. And that's why I kind of feel pretty good about Michigan's chances in this one, even though it's on the road at a place that they haven't traditionally played well at. But they won there last year. Again, if it's a close game, you got to like Michigan, I think.
Yeah, what do we see first? Hack a Hap or Hack a Simpson? Could be a...
Simpson's been making his free throws late.
That's true.
So, and if it's Hap, I start fouling him with, you know, Austin Davis. He's got his 5 fouls, 5 minutes. I would save that for the 8-minute mark of the second half.
Yeah, I'm usually never a pro. Like, I'm never a believer in the, he's got 5 fouls, just go use him and just make him earn him on the line. Like, people have to say that kind of crap. But when you have a guy who's shooting 32% at the free throw line in Big Ten games, it becomes a worthy strategy. And you can tell it's bothering Hap mentally, too.
No doubt.
He was really frustrated after that. I think it was the Minnesota game. And that is certainly an opportunity because you can't really stop him otherwise.
Yep.
He is pretty incredible. He's using 38% of Wisconsin's offensive possessions in the Big Ten. That's a ridiculous, that's a stupid number. It's just, I don't even understand how that's possible, to be honest. I mean, they just, he has to do everything. And that's,
he has to go do everything. And it's, you can double him, but it's, I don't think it's worth doubling him, really, because he can make the passes out, but if he's going to be that turnover prone at the same time, maybe it is worth it. I think the bigger question of doubling Hap or not is where. If he's on the block, don't bother. If he's 10 feet out, send the extra man.
If he's 10 feet out, he's just going to dribble down to the block. That's all he does.
That's why you send the extra guys, that he dribbles it off of his knee.
The problem is, for Wisconsin, there's no one else on that team that is a threat to do something with the ball. They have guys that can catch it and shoot it, but what other action? I mean, you have Trice dribbling into Davidson a jump shot.
Splinter that wood, pound that ball. All over the place.
He can draw charges and
he can dribble
take cheap
he
shots.
He can dribble it really hard.
Yeah.
What's your pick? Michigan, Wisconsin.
I think Michigan loses.
Okay.
I said that before. I said that's their first loss.
All right. It's a bad take.
That's why we're here.
But let's transition. Michigan State, 10 straight wins, 15-2 overall, 6-0 in the Big Ten. The collision course continues. This is a team that, similarly to Michigan, is finding new ways to be good and finding new bodies and improving. It's just kind of under some different circumstances. Not having Joshua Langford and Kyle Arnes in there is certainly an issue. And what the deal is with Langford is definitely kind of a cloud that's kind of hanging fairly low, I feel like, right now. How bad is this thing? Tom Izzo has said point blank that it's not a stress fracture. He said that there's not ligament damage, but Langford remains in a walking boot. And anyone who's been around a situation like this, you know, it's just like the longer a thing like that goes, it's a little strange. Maybe how long this has taken or what the deal is or some of the air of mystery around it. It's not a high ankle sprain either, so
we're running out of things for it to be.
Exactly. So that's the thing where it's like, if it's not any of that, then what is it? I don't know, and I don't want to speculate for all I know. All Izzo has said, I was at his press conference today up in East Lansing, and all he said is he's basically out for Thursday at Nebraska, but I'm trying to remember how much further he took it. I think he just said we'll know more later this week. So maybe Maryland on Monday is still in question. I would be surprised, though, just because there hasn't been encouragement in the voice, if you know what I mean. So, but, you know,
when you're beating teams by 25 points for 100 possessions, do you need a rushing back?
That's the thing. You can, there's no reason to do that right now. And the freshmen are getting valuable minutes. My boy Gabe Brown getting, what do you get, 21 the other day against Penn State? Something like that. But, yeah, you know, these are interesting guys getting put into new spots. I thought Foster Lawyer looked as confident and as poised as he has all year in the win at Penn State. I was not there, mainly because Michigan plays a mile from my house and Michigan State played in State College, Pennsylvania. So, yeah, I took the easy road.
The Eagles lose.
And I, all right, we're going to need to pause this or something. It's unnecessary. Unnecessary.
I heard your glowing for the
right,
last
right in the middle months. Of the pod.
Yeah, we don't need that.
Shit. That was, okay, go ahead.
Michigan State has been dominant in the Big Ten. They're first in offensive efficiency, first in effective field goal percentage, first in offensive rebounding rate, first in two-point field goal percentage, second in free throw rate. So we get that their offense is this great offense. They're also 6 percentage points almost better in effective field goal percentage defense than any other team in the league. They've played better than Michigan in Big Ten games, pretty much hands down. And they've played a slightly more difficult schedule.
Yes.
For good. So
For all the talk about Michigan's defense, Michigan State's defense is holding Big Ten teams to 25% on threes, 42% on twos, both ranking number one in the league.
Yeah, last year's Michigan State defense was great, right? We all think of it as sort of the pinnacle of interior defense. They had Jaren Jackson out there. Their effective field goal percentage defense for the year in Big Ten play was 43.4%. This team is at 40.6%. Mm-hmm. So they're better. I mean, it's obviously early in the year, and those numbers will go down a bit. But what they're doing on defense, I think people kind of lose track of.
Definitely.
Because the offense has been so good. And Definitely. Now maybe you could say Michigan and Michigan State have puffed up defensive numbers from getting just to play Penn State, because they are pretty brutal offensively right now. But
That
Michigan State is looking the part, and it looks like, I don't know. What else did you think from the Penn State game?
Well, it's one of the, they didn't play that well. I think Izzo after the game was like, we suck or something ridiculous like that. I think he went all in, bombs away, which, you know, that's kind of how that goes. He definitely wasn't happy with how Cassius Winston played. And in fairness, when rewatching the game, like in the first half, he had a couple passes go right through guys' hands. He had one drive to the basket where he was called for a charge. It should have been an N1. It was not a charge. It was a terrible call. No one played particularly well. But, like, at Penn State on January 13th, when Penn State is clearly just in the process of giving up on the year, no one even wants to be there. The place is dead. That is a bullshit game, bullshit arena. Get the win and get out of there. And that's what they did. So, you know, really good teams have gone into Penn State and matched the apathy and lost games in the past. And Michigan State did not do that. It got its win. It took care of it. And it left. I think you'll see a guy like Cassius Winston bounce back in the game at Nebraska and kind of return to being the type of player you see. Like, that place is just a black hole where good teams go to lose their momentum. And at least they emerged still intact.
Let's hold on. I did project.
Was that too hard? Was that too hard to trash?
I did project that Cassius Winston would struggle against Reeves and Wheeler. And he did. He's always struggled a little bit more against super athletic point guards. We also predicted that Penn State's offense was just terrible and would have no chance to keep up. And it was rough watching those tiring Penn State possessions that would work around, and then they would fire up a three, and you just knew it had no chance. And then Michigan State goes down the other end. Everyone in the building knows the ball's going to get to Nick Ward on the block, and he's just going to scoop it up into the hoop, and then repeat, repeat, repeat. It was tough to watch.
Yep.
Tough to watch from just, you feel bad for Penn State because I don't see this thing getting much better anytime soon.
No, I think it goes further off the rails, if anything.
Just Lamar Stevens is going to fire up one more baseline jumper and we'll see where we end up.
The good news for Penn State is it ended season with Rutgers and Illinois in the last two games. So at least it'll end on a high note. Maybe.
Sort of like winning the NIT before your best player goes to Italy.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Man, cold-blooded. That was almost as harsh as the Eagles line. So this lineup without those two key pieces, what are you liking? What are you concerned about? Because it looks like it's going to be the same exact team that plays against Nebraska on Thursday.
I like that. No, Langford forces Winston to be more aggressive, and I think it's forced them to go inside to Nick Ward a little bit more. I think that Nebraska could be tricky because they're much more perimeter-oriented, and that might be a spot where Michigan State wishes they had Langford as an extra perimeter defender, which hasn't really come up yet. But I think that Nebraska is just terrible on the defensive glass, and Michigan State is dominant there. And if you put Xavier Tillman and Nick Ward in there, they're just going to get every single offensive rebound against Nebraska, and I think that's probably enough. But where do you see it?
So here's what I'd like to say. At one of these games before these guys come back, I am waiting for the Aaron Henry breakout game. everyone loves Henry's game, right? And everyone sees all the potential there. It's glaringly obvious how good he's going to be. I feel like he's one game away from turning the corner into being a guy on this team. Because right now, he does a lot of nice things. He is where he should be. He's made some big shots. He's taken some big shots and made some big shots. But he's 16 games. Is that right? Or am I wrong on that number? How many games have they played? 17 games into his career, and he's played double-digit minutes in every game. His last four games in Big Ten play, 19 minutes, 14 minutes, 22 minutes, 25 minutes. He still hasn't hit double figures, double digits in a game this year, which is odd. Like, that's surprising.
It's not his role, though.
I understand that. But I'm just saying, with Langford out, with Arns out, like, I think it's just a spot for Henry to be a little bit more offensive, be a little bit more aggressive, just so that they have another option. And like, all that matters right now is being as good as possible in March. And I do feel like this stretch with these guys out, like, this is a time for Henry to have his game. Like, it's going to happen at some point where he's going to go score 16 or 17 points in a game. And it's going to kind of change his dynamic. I'm thinking it comes here soon.
I think you could say he's probably one of the most valuable players in the country who hasn't scored in double figure. I mean, he gives them so much.
That'd be a very odd stat, but yeah.
Already, his impact is his defense, his athleticism. He gives them totally. That extra dimension, and I think you need that. And Nebraska actually is probably a good spot for him because they play so many wings. They have mm-hmm. guys who can beat you off the dribble.
A lot of length on the perimeter.
A lot of length.
They're going to disrupt Michigan
State. Stretch you out, spreads, play small. And it's a good – I'm interested to see how Michigan State looks against a really high-volume ball screen team in Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
Nebraska's offense is very good. The defense has completely fallen off a cliff, but they're the only team that runs more ball screens in the Big Ten than Nebraska is Michigan. And obviously we saw how Michigan spread Michigan State out with the ball screen game last year. So that matchup and how they defend that, do they – especially with some of the bigger lineups, that will be kind of an intriguing spot to see where Michigan State's at, because you don't face a team that runs that sort of that much action all the time. You know what I mean?
It'll be a big test for that. I assume it'll be a big test for that two big lineup, right? Tillman, Ward?
Yeah, the problem Nebraska has is it's one thing to spread a team out, but if you allow every Big Ten team to grab 4 out of 10 missed shots off the rim, right. You're just, what are you going to do? I mean, they just can't rebound, and that's not really an ideal.
And you know that'll spot. Probably be the last stat written on the whiteboard before Michigan State takes the floor. Because if you go and you dominate the offensive glass on the road, that's how, you know, you can win. So I would imagine it'll be, you know, extra possessions, steal that win, and but you're going to have to defend because Nebraska can shoot the hell out of it at home. That's kind of the worst case scenario, right? Is Nebraska just getting hot and that place turning into a hornet's nest? Because I don't know how many people like in the league really understand what it's like to see a game there, but it gets crazy in there when they're playing well.
And it's going to be similar to the Michigan Wisconsin game. It's going to be a spot where Nebraska needs a home win,
right? Especially if there's L tonight to Indiana.
They could be 2-4 after if they lose at Indiana. And this Michigan State game is the kind of game they cried all last year that they didn't get at home in the league.
Mm-hmm.
They missed the tournament because of it, and now they got to go show that they can win it. They haven't lost at home this year. They're really good at home last year. It's definitely one of the top environments, probably the toughest place Michigan State will have played yet this year, I would say.
Man, how much are they missing that Jordy Tishmongo? I didn't realize they're 317th in the country in opponent offensive rebound percentage.
They're embarrassingly bad on the defensive glass.
And he transferred, right? He
transferred in June or something.
Where did he end up? Hold on. This is Google to the rescue. Dayton. Oh, my God. He's going to destroy the Atlantic 10. That's going to be hilarious. But
I didn't ever think he was particularly very good.
He's just enormous, though. There's no one in the A-10 his size. You ever seen that league?
Yeah, he's gonna have you don't want me to dive into St. Joe's on this podcast, oh my, too, do you?
No, it's a these are dark times for the Hawks, but yeah, I mean that's a huge. People talk about the transfer impacts and stuff like that. I mean that's you lose a center. Would he be starting this year? He'd at least be their sixth man. I think probably. He'd probably be starting.
Like, their big thing last year was so they play small and they're really effective offensively with that small lineup, but. Last year it was a wrinkle. This year it's the only option they really have, and that's not.
But then they're
not a fun one.
But then they're ranked eighth in the country in defensive effective field goal percentage.
Yeah, those
so
numbers
they create a lot of misses, but don't get them. Well, that's not a good strategy.
Hold on, their first two games against Mississippi Valley State and Southeastern Louisiana, they gave up a 20% effective field goal percentage and a 30%. So their numbers have been slowly coming back to earth.
Skewed.
They're seventh in the Big Ten in effective field goal percentage defense.
Okay.
There so that go. Gives you a little bit better idea. And they're 13th in the Big Ten in defensive efficiency, which is
that makes a lot
not
more
great.
Sense.
So their defense has completely fallen off over the last month or so, really, if we're being honest.
Well,
but,
you don't get those Delta Devils of Mississippi Valley State to beat up on, and things get a little bit more difficult.
They've also played Minnesota, Maryland, and Iowa on the road, and those mm-hmm. are all big teams that all crash the glass.
Fair.
Right? So that can maybe have some impact. Sort of like if your offense is highly rated, but you haven't played Michigan or Michigan State, like it might not actually be that good. They've played a lot of really good offensive rebounding teams, which you have to point out, I suppose.
Right.
Still, they're playing the best one on Thursday, and that's not a great matchup for them in the slightest.
Interesting. What'd you think of Cassius Winston's week?
So I expected him to struggle at Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
So that didn't surprise me. He was very good against Purdue. I mean, if Michigan State plays well, it's going to be because he played well. I mean,
sure.
it's pretty simple. I don't know. Sort of, I guess the knock on him would be how he fares against hyper athletic point guards in big spots. And we haven't quite seen that. I think Glenn Watson will be a good matchup. Anthony Cowan will be a good matchup. We'll start to learn a little bit more about if that's something to be concerned about this year.
It's a 12 turnover week, when you're missing your co-pilot in the backcourt, you just kind of want to see. And I know circumstances are different, and even, frankly, some of the turnovers weren't even on him, but you don't want to see a step back there, because this was, that taking care of the ball has been the knock on Michigan State, and you just don't want your best player to be the one that is keeping that element at play. You know what I mean?
Well, if you have to assist almost half of your teammates' made shots, you're going to turn the ball over more than them, too.
Well, you can't turn the ball over seven times at Penn State.
No, and he has turnovers. I don't know. I didn't see any of this week, but sometimes they've had like turnovers inbounding the ball and like weird stuff that you could just take away. But I think some of that.
I mean, he threw a beauty to Kenny Goins that went right through his hands. That should have been a dunk and was instead a turnover. So yes, these things do happen. I don't know. It was just kind of a weird week, and I'm not saying it's a step back. I'm think of highly of him as I have all along. It's just well, first of all, I've also said it a million times. It's really hard to play well every game. And if this is his dip, then so be it. At least you did it on a week with two wins. But like that ain't going to get it done at Nebraska, right?
Let's go with the same question you posed about Michigan. What will it take for a Big Ten team to beat Michigan State?
Ooh, that's a good question. Do you have an answer ready?
No.
Okay.
Let's hear. I'm putting you on the spot.
I would probably say poor three-point shooting combined with turnovers.
I would say
there's going to be one game where they go 18 turnovers and they go 6 for 20 on threes and they take an L.
I think you have to do three things. You have to play good transition defense.
Sure.
dominate the defensive glass, don't give up second chances, and then slow down Nick Ward. I think those
or
are
get him in foul steps. Trouble.
Or and that can be by getting him in foul trouble, yeah. And I think Nebraska can play good transition defense at home, but they can't do the other two.
It's fair. It's fair. The transition defense thing, I do feel like Michigan State has done a better job at times over, like, since Big Ten play started of, if they don't get that quick bucket right away, still turning a possession into something. I think they've grown there.
Yeah, you just can't beat Michigan State if you give up those four or five completely easy buckets.
Sure.
In transition like that. And Nick Ward running the floor. I mean, how do you stop that? You just, there's so many. Nick Ward will score five baskets in any game that he just gets because he beats you to a spot, or you don't get position, or you fall asleep for 1 minute. And that is, you have to take those baskets away if you're going to have a chance, because they're going to score other ways too. But it's those freebies, basically, running down the court, stuff like that. He had a great play where he beat his guy down the floor and then basically ran the defender off the floor. And I think that led to the Aaron Henry dunk. I mean, it's just, there's just that pressure on you every single possession to run your ass back. And that, I think, is wearing teams down right now that can't keep up.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I feel like the way that they attack and with their bigs and with what Ward does, like, Ward is his whole career, it's, he's just always productive. He always gets buckets. And it's kind of one of those things that it's going to be damn near impossible to stop sometimes, because he just puts the ball in the hoop. But if you can prevent this team, I mean, how many guys are shooting over 40% on threes? One, two, three. And then Aaron Henry's at 30. Oh, he's only made 5 for 13. But, you know, when they're making threes, I feel like that's when the games go from competitive to blowouts. And, you know, you need to be, you need to at least stay close with this team, which is proving really, really difficult for a lot of teams. I mean, basically, since Florida, they haven't had a game. And before that, all of their top performances, I think, were probably really good shooting nights. But I'm saying, it's,
wasn't Ohio State a game?
Yeah,
they pulled away late, but that was neck and neck for 30 minutes at least, 35 minutes.
I'm trying to think of what the last couple minutes were.
If it was, I just remember Caleb Wesson chucking up a 30-foot three.
Yeah, they took control in the, like, they were in control in the closing minutes. I don't know. I mean, I think you're spot on with the whole transition defense, but It's kind of a carbon copy of Michigan, where the team there is really good. It has a lot of options. The one I'm writing this, I think, for tomorrow for on The Athletic, is the one thing that this team has in common is not particularly caring who gets what. And for two teams that have a lot of guys who can score and a lot of guys who could put up 25 on different nights, to have that kind of special sauce of being okay, just kind of taking the game as it goes. And if someone gets going, just keep feeding them and blah, blah, blah. And I don't think there's resentment on any given night for whoever gets it. And that's a really hard thing to maintain. And it's a kind of delicate balance and a delicate dynamic. And both teams have it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I see Michigan State as much more formulaic than Michigan. Like, Michigan State's offense comes the same way from game to game more than Michigan's. It can end up in different players' hands, but, right, like, if Matt McQuaid is having a big game, it's probably because they're going inside out to Nick Ward and then kicking it out, or you're getting double teams, or, you know what I mean? It all comes from either Cassius Winston, right, like, he's still creating so much of it. It's sort of the same recipe, whereas Michigan, I think the way that you get to that endpoint can go in very different ways. I think that speaks to Michigan State having a better way.
I would somewhat agree, but like we're kind of forgetting about what it looks like a little bit when Josh Langford is really going well. And because when he's playing, you know, when Texas Josh Langford shows up, who put up like 29 or 30 on them, or the guy who played in the second half against Kansas, they can look like a very different team, and they have a very different offensive element there where, okay, well, now Winston can get, you know, 25, and Ward can get 25, and Winston can get 25. So, like, what the hell do you do then? If he comes back healthy, I think it kind of has more of that Michigan dynamic of, you know, pick your poison, basically. Who would you prefer to beat you? And that's a tough spot.
That's fair. I was saying more, I think Michigan State goes into any game trying to do the same thing. Almost like I would say Michigan did that last year.
Sure.
This year, you're not sure Michigan could attack with Jordan Poole in one game as mm-hmm. the primary facilitator. It could be Charles Matthews in another game. It could be Xavier Simpson at Illinois. So I think that changes more in terms of just the roles are more interchangeable.
Right.
Whereas Michigan State, the production come from different spots, but I think it's the same formula on any given day to start. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And I mean, especially right now, I mean, it's, you know, State, they kind of got what they got as long as Langford's out of the lineup. It's got to be Winston, Ward, and then their complementary pieces stepping up. Whereas Michigan, just looking at their last couple games, Illinois, it was Simpson and Teske. Indiana, it was Poole and Charles Matthews. Penn State, it was Poole and Brazdeikis. If you skip over those crappy non-conference games, go back to South Carolina, it was Poole and Teske. And then Northwestern, it was Brazdeikis and Poole, right? Like, it's always...
Yeah, Villanova, it was Matthews, isolation. Right. Like, it's just changed a lot, yep. Sort of on a week-by-week basis.
Yep. Okay, do we... Big Ten?
Let's do it.
Power rankings. All right.
Let's get into it.
We did our little pre-draft action.
I'm picking first, and I took Michigan, although I would say that you could make a case for Michigan State at this point, but we're just going to stick with Michigan because they haven't lost a game, and
yeah,
that's where we're at.
Number two, Michigan State, obviously. We'll just go right ahead to number three.
I've got Maryland. And obviously they play tonight, which puts us in a tricky spot. But right now they're 5-1. By the time you're listening to this, they might be something else. But I think it all comes down to the only more dominant rebounding team in the Big Ten is probably Michigan State. Maryland's been great on both backboards, and that comes from the Fernando-Jalen Smith duo. And then they have Anthony Cowan's kind of the forgotten point guard in the league right now. I know some people aren't a fan of him as much, but you have to point out that he has been playing very well. They have enough around him that he can kind of come in the clutch, and this team looks all of a sudden pretty dangerous, I would say. Are you buying into Maryland now? Another one of your great takes that you shared with us last week. And I will add, their schedule is still bullshit, and they deserve to... Yeah. Suffer from their non-conference schedule, but they're playing great, and they look like the third best team in the Big Ten by a pretty comfortable margin.
Well, and their resume, it surely goes without saying. I mean, they definitely have the number three resume, and that's one of the things with these rankings. Like, in certain spots, I don't know if it's Maryland's the fourth best team, or I don't know if or the third best team, and so on and so forth. But like, you know, we're going for a power ranking. It's by resume, and they're clearly number three in that regard. And what's interesting is they are 6th among Big Ten teams on KenPom.
But it's close.
It is. They're 21st in the country, but they are 21st in KenPom. It's an interesting team. Did you see any of that Minnesota game? Was that early last week?
Yeah,
They switched to that zone in the second half.
And Anthony Cowan went crazy.
Yeah.
And you still put a, you said that it was bullshit and we shouldn't rate Maryland high because you don't believe in them. Well, and here they are.
I stand by that. Standing by that. We'll see. I don't know. I'm still not buying. Sorry.
We'll see. They have a big stretch. Their next stretch, they go Wisconsin. They have Wisconsin at home tonight. They go to Ohio State on Friday, and they go to Michigan State on Monday. That is brutal. And then they have Illinois on a neutral.
Where do they come out of that stretch at?
I'll go 1-2. I'll set the over-under at 1.5 wins.
I'll take the under.
All right.
Did I break down the rankings? We got it on the spreadsheet, don't we?
Yeah, okay, we do.
Here we go. All right. I'm at number 4. Speaking of interesting teams, I'm taking Minnesota, and I don't think it's the fourth. It actually might be the fourth best team in the league. Who knows anymore? But considering what they've done, 13-3 overall, 3-2 in the league last week, a win at Rutgers, or no, that was home against Rutgers, I'm sorry, after a loss at Maryland. But before that, or no, that was a home loss to Maryland. Should they be fourth? I don't even know anymore.
Is your pick.
I don't know. I did like what I saw in that Rutgers game. The talent on Minnesota, I still think, makes it an interesting team in terms of the Big Ten race, because when I look at a lot of the other teams that are in this conversation, there aren't multiple players that really kind of blow you away in terms of their talent. And it's basically, you know, Indiana's got there too. Purdue has Carson. Maryland has Ethan Happ. Wisconsin has Ethan Happ. Maryland has Bruno and Jalen Smith and Cowan. But when you look at Minnesota, like a guy like Coffey, a guy like Murphy, and when Washington is playing somewhat within himself and they can actually run some offense, and when McBrayer is shooting threes, like they can get enough stuff going where they can look pretty good. And God knows how long it's going to last, but yeah, coming out of next week, they're going to be 5-2 in the Big Ten, because they have Illinois and Penn State before they get Minnesota, and then they get Michigan, and it'll be a road game. I'm not saying they have to go win that game, but like, you know, Minnesota will have to prove right then and there if it can actually be a team that plays into the upper level of this league.
Upset alert in Champaign on Wednesday night.
Really?
Well, the only problem, though, for Illinois there, Minnesota, basically the only thing Minnesota does well is get to the free throw line, and basically the only thing Illinois does is foul teams.
Illinois is terrible.
Give up. But we'll see. Minnesota can't shoot, though, which I kind of feel like limits their ceiling. They're shooting 33% from three, but only 27% of their shots are from three-point range. They just basically pound the ball inside and try to get fouled. Not really my style of Big Ten hoops, but what are you going to do? Next up, I have Purdue, a team I'm not super high on, but if you go on the road and win at Wisconsin.
It's not good when you're at the fifth team and you're not high on them. Not great.
When you go on the road and win at Wisconsin, we got to give props. And I think the one important thing to note with Purdue is that they've played a really tough schedule, and it gets easier from here. I pulled this somewhere, but I can't find it. Basically, Purdue has played the toughest schedule in the league to this point, and they had the easiest remaining schedule. Their schedule comes in kind of in the middle, but it gets a lot better. They've had to go to Michigan. They've had to go to Michigan State and to Wisconsin. That's pretty brutal in the first five games, and they stole a win. They're going to be tough to beat at home. Their defense is just awful, but what are you going to do? Carson Edwards can get buckets, and then you'll win some games.
Let's roll the ball out. At sixth, we have Iowa, and you could make the case for Iowa to be probably fourth, really.
Yeah.
And we've really kind of just hated on them all year, but they got some stigmas to shake from last season, right? And their losses are Wisconsin, Michigan State, and Purdue, at Purdue. Like, those aren't, you know, that's not anything that, say, the selection committee, for instance, would even blink at. And right now, they're riding a three-game winning streak of wins home against Nebraska, at Northwestern, and home against Ohio State. And this week, Iowa gets Penn State on the road, and then Illinois. They kind of have the opposite schedule. That they can come out of this thing at 5-3, right back in the... are they in the AP top 25 this week?
We need to ban poll discussion from this podcast. I couldn't give a shit less. Iowa.
Amazing. All right. I'm just saying, it makes you more... I'm sorry if it's not notoriety to you, but you get more notoriety when you're in the AP poll.
They need to show me something on the road. But they have proven that they can win at home, and their offense is dangerous. We'll see. They're in the conversation. They won that game at Northwestern without Tyler Cook, which mm-hmm. is impressive. I guess when you play everyone all the time, you are ready for that.
Yep.
So what do we got next? We got Wisconsin. I know that you are down on Wisconsin, and it's fair. They lost three games. They're also one of the only teams left in the league that has a significant positive efficiency margin by much of anything, which we got to give them some credit for.
No, we don't.
We do. So we've talked a lot about Wisconsin. I'm not going to throw in the towel on this team yet, and I think their defense is still very good. It just comes down to whether their offense shows up on any given night. And mm-hmm. it sounds crazy to say that about a team that is the second best shooting team in the conference, but Ethan Happ can't make free throws.
Right. And that is troublesome. Next we have, this is number 8. We got Indiana. And I'll tell you what, like, I was actually fairly impressed with how Indiana played at Maryland. I don't know if you saw that game or not, but I thought they gave them pretty good run. Once again, Romeo Langford was pretty awesome. He's pretty damn good. And he was making threes in the second half. I mean, a lot of them were kind of in garbage time where he was just getting up shots just to try to keep it close or make a comeback, whatever. But he finished with 28 in that game. Juwan Morgan finished with 14, 7 to 10 twos. You know, that's a really, really hard place to win. I mean, that would have been a really impressive win.
You go up 28-14 and you lose 78-75. That's doesn't sit that well. I mean,
about league road games. Like, it's going to be – they're not going to go into Maryland and get a double-digit lead early and then – carry it through the game. No team is doing that.
Up 14 with 5:30 to go in the first half, and then the whole thing slips away.
I'm just saying that I thought that they played well for a lot of the game. They were impressive for a lot of the game. They looked really good. Yeah, the wheels came off, but I thought they looked pretty good for a lot of the time. And Langford is a problem, man. He's really good. And, I mean, the problem was they just had zero answer down low against Maryland. Fernando was just an absolute monster. And that's that. But Indiana, 12-4 overall, 3-2. I still think they're in pretty decent shape. Tough week for them coming up, though, I believe.
Nebraska tonight, and then they go to Purdue.
Yeah, so big rivalry game. That'll definitely be one worth watching for all of you out there. That's a Saturday game, I believe. So I would definitely tune in for that. That should be pretty entertaining. How are you feeling on Archie Island, by the way? What temperature is it on Archie Island right now?
It's frigid.
Oh!
Winter storms forecasted. There's only two guys pulling our ship here. We need some support.
Number nine,
we've got Nebraska. And they are kind of in a tricky spot all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. They're everyone's darling pick, and they're obviously, like, they're very good. Their offense has been great, but they have a road game at Indiana, and then they have Michigan State coming in on Thursday. If they lose those two games, they're at 2-5 in the league, and all of a sudden you start getting worried. And we've seen sort of
– you start getting worried, and seats start getting warm too.
Tim Miles' seasons with expectations have kind of gone off the rails in the past. I don't know. I think that they don't have a bad loss, right, in Big Ten play. They've lost all their games on the road. They haven't given up a home game. Mm-hmm. They're going to be very good at home. So there's a lot of time to kind of right the ship, but they could use a big – they need something to get excited about, I think, to sort of pump up the season there. And Michigan State coming in on Thursday night would be one that they would have circled there. If they win that, all of a sudden you could see them – stringing together a winning streak. They go at Rutgers, Ohio State at home, Wisconsin at home, at Illinois, Maryland at home. All of a sudden, they're in the NCAA tournament by February, but we'll see.
Right.
Big spot coming up.
It's if you look at their next three, it's three at home, three in away, but two of the away games are Rutgers and Illinois. So, you know, you got to figure you can take those two and – you know, if you can win those home games, if you go through this stretch and you go 5-1 with maybe a loss at Indiana, they're right back in the conversation if they can do that. And they certainly have the talent to do so. Next up, we got Ohio State, which kind of showed its ass this week a little bit. You know, lost at home to Michigan State on the 5th, and no shame on that, obviously, but not ideal to follow that up with road losses to Rutgers and Iowa. That Rutgers game was horrific. They looked terrible, obviously. Went 8-for-26 on threes. Had 12 assists to 13 turnovers. It was just an ugly, ugly game. And it was kind of all the issues of that loss to Michigan State just exposed to the extreme, it seemed like. And then I did not see the Iowa game. If you did, you can comment on that. But otherwise,
I did not. But they scored 0.86 points per possession, which is not going to get you many wins. And I think we've kind of hinted at the fact that I'm not sure what that Ohio State offense is when the rubber meets the road. And
why didn't CJ Jackson start that game?
I do not know. Did he play?
He played. He played. He played. 22 minutes, but he didn't start.
Not sure.
That's weird. I'm sure.
And next up, we've got Rutgers. Rutgers beat Ohio State. Another case of plucking off a top 25 win to brag about just as a team is sliding right on out of the top 25. But that's a big win for Rutgers. And then they went on the road at Minnesota and lost by 18. But we're down. I think there's very clearly four teams at the bottom of the Big Ten that just aren't going to be competitive this year. And then Rutgers has done more than the other three. So
I was going to say, which one would you rather play the least? Put a healthy Vic Law on Northwestern for this conversation.
I think all those teams, they're all pretty bad. I couldn't. I would say Illinois because they're just a pain in the ass to play against.
The team that's ranked, aren't they last in this? Oh no, they're second to last in this. We'll get to them though. Rutgers is, I don't know, man. Rutgers is tough. I wouldn't want to play them.
Worth noting, of Michigan's six Big Ten wins. No, four of Michigan's six Big Ten wins are against one of these four teams at the bottom.
Oh boy.
Just pointed it out.
You're going to get some comments on the Twitter from everyone that's trying to defend Michigan's schedule.
They didn't make it. It's just
Beeline is the first one to say, who did they play last week when he was like, if we had their schedule, we'd probably have two or three losses. I think it was Illinois. Before the Illinois game, he was like, if we played their schedule, we'd have two or three losses.
And yeah, if anyone played Illinois just happens to have 12 losses.
Exactly. Okay.
You've got Northwestern 12th, next.
Northwestern, which is basically just holding on for dear life, it seems like, to not just completely fall off the cliff. They're now 1-5 in the league. Thank goodness for that win at Illinois, or this thing would really be going sideways. Oh, right. The win against Illinois at home. This week they got Rutgers. Big, big showdown in the Big Ten basement. See who comes out on top there. I still like some of Northwestern's pieces. Every once in a while they can look like a team that should be better than they are, but there's just not enough there. And they got Pete Nance right now in the starting lineup for Vic Law, and that did not go well the other day. There's just they just don't have the horses to play right here.
And Vic Law, they can't beat. They can't win games without Vic Law.
No chance.
He might be one of the most important players to any single team. I have Illinois next. I know that I wasn't very complimentary of Illinois on the last podcast, but they've lost 5 games in a row, but whatever. We're going to put them at 13. They're not Penn State. They don't have the worst offense in the league. They're just the second worst offense in the league. That's what we're going to give them.
They're pretty hard to watch.
I actually like Underwood's offense.
Okay.
I think it could work, but they just make 5 to 15 just awful decisions over the course of a game, and there's not that many decisions to make, and that's not really a winning combo.
No. I don't like the team. I don't really like the style of play. So I see Illinois remaining here for the foreseeable future. And last but not least, the Nittany Lions of Penn State are checking in the final spot. They are really, the league did them no favors. They are 0-6 in the league, but their losses are at Maryland, home to Indiana, at Michigan, home to Wisconsin, at Nebraska, home to Michigan State. So it's easy to shit on Penn State and all that, but I don't think any coach in the league would want anything to do with that schedule. It's basically the exact opposite of the underhand lob that was thrown to Michigan. So, it's rough sledding and they look terrible. The problem is that the team looks like it's coming apart at this point. There's going to need to be some kind of a come to Jesus moment, I think, for them to salvage a competitive second half of the Big Ten schedule.
They're shooting 22% on threes in Big Ten games.
It's not good.
Not good. But it's hard to shoot that poorly for the whole year, so maybe that gives them some hope.
Well, they rank last in the league in offensive efficiency, effective field goal percentage, three-point field goal percentage.
They get more shots blocked than anyone else, too. Throw that in for good measure.
Which is quite a stack. At least they do have some athletes, you know, like... If anything, you would say they have, you know, maybe a couple guys who can go ball out and attack the basket. Maybe that's why they keep getting rejected.
It's the Philly buckets, but they're not coming. The Philly buckets keep ending up in the third row.
Okay, well, that was an hour and 15 minutes of fun. We hope everyone enjoyed it. Be sure to subscribe to the pod, subscribe to The Athletic, subscribe to UM Hoops. The pod's free, and so that's good. The other two, if you support what we do and you enjoy yourself, throw us a couple shillings and read some content that's probably a little bit more structured than our rambling podcast. But
hopefully,
that's the goal at least. But tell your friends, rate the podcast, subscribe to the podcast, and anything else, Dylan?
No, I think that's a wrap.
All right. Well. This will probably all be a moot point after the games tonight and our rankings get all flipped around, but we'll see what we can do. If we don't put one together before next Monday, I don't know if we will or not. We haven't really gotten to that, but we'll see. Otherwise, thanks for listening. Be sure to tip your bartenders and your servers.